I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 503. We were bound to talk about all of this.
Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
That's good. So guys, we have to apologize just, again, a little bit, because it was a little bit of a snafu with our posting. So you probably noticed that last week we put out episode 496, even though we're in the 500s now, and you're probably like, what?
What?
Yeah, we recorded episode 496, the clip show, but we...
It never went out?
We forgot to... publish episode 496. We forgot, huh?
Lots of shit was going on then.
Right, we thought we posted it. We actually didn't post it, so we fixed it. We did a new title, but our bad. But we're not going back in time. We just had that one little snafus, like, but we fixed it.
We tripped, but we caught ourselves.
Yeah, gracefully, we did the tuck and roll. Quick pause, pose, and now we're back walking in stride. So welcome to the Eshcast. Like I said, I'm Ninja Sister, she's Pandalicious. We got all kinds of stuff to talk to you guys about today. It is an all game, video game, just game
show. It's just a smorgasbord of games, both tabletop and digital. Stuff that is not out that to stuff that is in your homes.
What we're saying is it's nerdy, it's games. We'll have some anime for you next week mixed in for sure. But right now, this show is going to be all game-based.
Oh, man. I can't wait for anime next week because I've been watching this anime on Funimation. It's dope.
Okay, well, hold on to that for next week.
I right am. Now, I'm holding it.
Like a secret. But we are talking games this week. I know many of you are looking forward to us covering BFIG. The team had a great time. BFIG, if you don't know, is the Boston Festival of Indie Games. It is the largest indie game showcase in the really North Shore area for Massachusetts. And it's a great collection of both tabletop and video games. Panda and KBD and Billy Nichols, Quicksilver from Limit Break all attended the show, had a great day. There's a bunch of coverage that's already...
Had a freaking busy-ass day.
Bunch of coverage that's already on our site, electricsisterhood.com. There's even more to come, so make sure that you check it out all week long for pieces... from Panda and from KBD and the rest of the team. Looking forward to that. Panda's going to share her thoughts on the show and some things that she experienced. And I'm going to chime in probably with my, oh man, wish I had done that. That would have been cool kind of lamentation. But before we do that, I'm actually going to take the mic of a thousand truths first and talk about a game because it's kind of burning in my soul to talk about this. And surprisingly enough, it's a game that I played on my PlayStation 4. And I shouldn't say surprisingly enough because it's a game that was made by Santa Monica Studios. And you know that pretty much any and everything that they make, I enjoy to the hilt. It's a game that, you know, that game company worked on. And we also know how I feel about just the unbelievably creative and really innovative games that that game company creates. So I want to talk about Bound.
It's not that Kanye video with KK.
It's not Bound. No, it's not that one where you're like, are they actually fucking...
on a motorcycle that's clearly not moving because of the CG.
Right.
Bound.
And she's not definitely
Bound,
naked.
The one that Seth Rogen and James Franco did a parody of, which was better than Bound.
Yeah, not those. That's not what I'm talking about. Although I could talk about those, because those experiences were very interesting, at least for me. But that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Bound. And the tagline for Bound is, sometimes in order to move forward, you have to take a step back. So I'm going to preface this with, you have to go, before you even look at this game or think about buying this game, to their official site, which is bound.playstation.com. Because the site is very limited with the text that is on the pages. It is a very visual storytelling element. And I actually got interested in the game because I was watching a Let's Play from a couple of my more favorite YouTubers, Game Grumps. I'm addicted to them. And I had actually fallen asleep, and my YouTube went into autoplay. And when I woke up, there was a Grumpcade going on or something like that that had this game. And when I saw it, I immediately stopped in my tracks, completely lost track of every and anything that was being said by the two people playing the game. Or I should say the one person playing the game, the other person watching the game and talking. But completely lost track of what they were saying because I was just so enamored right off the bat with the look of the game. So when you start the game, you start the game as this woman who has a notebook, and she's obviously pregnant, walking.
Are you sure? Is it like a food baby or a real baby?
Real baby.
Are you sure?
Especially from the way that she waddles.
You can waddle when you have a food baby.
No, there's a pregnant waddle.
Okay.
The way that the hips spread when you're pregnant versus you just ate too much food. She is pregnant. Uh-huh. Okay, especially because there are times where she gently interacts with her belly.
Okay.
Okay. And so this woman is walking on the beach, and it's kind of a windswept day, and she has a notebook, you know, the little composition notebooks that you used to get, the black and white ones.
Yeah, I still have those in my office.
And she sits down, and then all of a sudden the world changes. And instead of being in a recognizable scene by the beach, you're now in this geometric kind of abstract world. And there is a queen talking to you. You are the princess. And you are...
pregnant?
No. You are a humanoid form, but there are no details. Everything is in this abstract. So, like, your entire face is covered in a slick shield. And the same for the queen. And so, everything is very abstract. And you find out from the queen that the kingdom is being destroyed. And she enlists you to try and help keep it afloat. And you go, okay, what can I do? And you venture out into the world to try and take on this creature that is, you know, destroying this environment. And the way that the character moves, Princess, is what I'll call her, is she is a dancer. Or she moves with dance. And I don't just mean, like, she walks gracefully. Every movement, even her pause animation when she stops and the character's not, the controller's not being interacted with, it is all very much drawn from ballet and modern dance.
Okay.
Okay, and so you basically have to get through this platformer. There are puzzles that you have to solve on how to get to different areas. And your first level, there really isn't anything that attacks you. You're just learning how to jump and how she moves and how she can run and how she can cross small, short beams. You know, all the basic platformer things that you learn. At the end of the level, you reach an area where you start to walk towards a door. There are no walls. There's just a floor and this door frame. And as you're walking towards the door frame, all of a sudden the world vibrates. And sound and really the visuals that are going on all over around you are huge. And they are a character all their own in this game. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to spoil the fuck out of this game. So
okay.
And even though
it sounded like you were going to do that anyway. I was prepared.
Yeah, and even though I'm going to do that, you should still play this game. Because there are many different ways to actually traverse each level. And so the way that I got through it may not necessarily be the way that you got through it. And there's also a speedrun component of the game that unlocks when you complete the story at least once. But as the world vibrates while you're walking down this tunnel, you're introduced to the memory system. And the memory system is all fragmented. And at this point, you're back to piecing together a memory of people. And what you are presented with first, as the first piece in this fragment, is a woman who I immediately recognized because I'm crazy observant. I'm like, she's probably the queen. Once I played some more levels, really the next level, I was like, okay, that's mom. That's our mom. And so as you start going through the levels, once you piece that piece of the memory together, you pop back out of the artistic geometric world, and you are then brought to the notebook, which you can page through the notebook and see that these are all drawings of worlds and lands and things. And as you complete a level, the woman rips that page out of the notebook. And so the first page, and the page that always remains, is a drawing of what appears to be these characters from this world. So you realize very quickly on that this world that you are running through in the platformer is the world that this woman must have created when she was younger. And she drew it in this notebook. And so what you are doing is you're basically going back through this woman's memories, but you don't know really why. You know, it's just like, well, maybe she went to the beach to have a moment.
I am strongly intrigued.
Yeah, you of all people, Panda, will love this game, but I think
got real big. I'm like, I want to know what are we doing.
And so you don't know why at this particular moment in time you're going through these memories. And of course me, because I'm a real introspective person, I'm like, okay, and this is before I went to the site, so I hadn't even heard the tagline. But I was like, okay, you know, maybe there was some hurt or something that happened to this woman, and now that she's about to be a mom, maybe she went to the beach to go through this notebook and, like, go through these memories. And the reason why she rips the pages out as you complete the levels is, you know, she's throwing those memories aside and making them part of her real past and letting them go and not keeping them as part of her life. And I'm like, Jesus, this is really fucking deep. And I'm only, like, 2 levels into this game.
Right.
But I want to complete this now.
I want to know.
As you get deeper into different levels, and they all have their own signature thing about the levels, it's a signature designs piece, some very specific to those levels puzzles, you start to encounter things that attack you. You don't ever have a health meter, and you don't have a set number of lives. If you fall off the environment, you just respawn right where you left off, and you pick up. So there's no points in the story mode. You are
it does hurt you. There's a minor setback with a reset, like back to where you fell from or whatever.
Yep.
See that? while I feel comfort with that right now, with the kind of atmosphere you're presenting to us, you know, me and our listeners, like, I don't know if eventually all those setbacks are going to somehow manifest to something later on. Like, there's a payoff to that later. Mm. Or no payoff. Good question. Like, a detriment or something. Like, all of a sudden, like whenever you do quick times, like, when you do quick times in, like, Until Dawn, you don't realize the severity of missing something until you see the end result. Right. And then it flashes back to you, like, oh, shit. That's when I fucked up, because you don't realize the gravity of what your actions are until you get to that payoff. Until you get to that payoff area of the narrative. So while it seems funness it now, where, oh yeah, I fell off that thing and it doesn't hurt me now, but it may end up hurting you later.
Right, and that does happen in many games. It at least for my story play. It did not have an effect.
Okay.
Okay.
Because it seems like they're kind of setting you up for, you know, you're not exactly sure what is and what isn't, and what does have severity versus what doesn't yet. Like, they're playing around. They're letting you know that everything is kind of up for grabs.
So as right far now, as things that have severity, it's not that anything has severity. It merely is that, much like Journey, you are on the journey, and you will complete the journey.
I loved Journey. Now I want to play Journey.
Well, you need to play Bound first, and then go back and play Journey. So as you progress through various levels, you start having interactions with the Queen and this other figure called the Savior. Which, after the third level, I was like, okay, so the Queen is Mom. The Savior is our brother.
Okay.
And so then I was like, if this is all about my family, then it means that the figure that's in the game that's always angry and causing me to be scared, and by scared I mean when you interact with the antagonist of the game, who is a large figure that is drawn as a male, okay? So that's how you know that it's, like, your dad, okay? Because the Queen has this big flowing skirt. You yourself are in a dress. There's another figure called the Savior who you meet, who's kind of standoffish with you and always blames things as being your fault and things like that. But he very much is similar in design to the antagonist. But the antagonist is always surrounded by an aspect of red and is always yelling. Or is chasing after the Queen and, like, trying to hit the Queen or hide her and things like that. So at this point I realize, okay, so this woman who is sitting on the beach who has this notebook comes from a broken family. And what we are playing through is this world that she drew, that she created, that encapsulated when her family broke apart. And so what I took this as was that, yeah, and so now she's sitting here on this beach going through all of these memories and wiping them away because she's about to have her own child. She has her own family, and she does not want to repeat those mistakes and those hurts that she had as a young child with her child that's about to come. So after you complete a level, like I said, you go down the hallway and more of this broken memory becomes available. And there are times through the levels, because you collect these, for lack of a better term, I'll call them giggles, because they sound like giggles, but they also sound like kind of cries. And you collect them as you go through the level. And then you are presented ultimately with a section before you get to the hallway of another memory that you piece together. And the first one's kind of a little innocuous. But the subsequent ones all focus around you being yelled at by your dad for something that your brother did. Your parents having a fight. There's one level at one point where you walk up to the Queen. And she's like, can't I just have some time by myself? And she disappears. And so then you just are traversing the level trying to get to her, calling out to Mother, like, that one, like, was painful. And then there are these other memories that you piece together where at one point the parents are fighting, actually in the kids' room, and the kids are hiding behind their toys, and the mother's necklace is broken and the beads are flying everywhere. There's a fight in the garage where, like, Dad is, like, brandishing a wrench, and Mom is yelling, and the kids bear witness to that. And then there's a point where the queen is talking to the princess. I can't remember if it was either midway through a level or at the end of the level. But she was like, "One day, my dear, you will have your own kingdom. As for me, I'm tired of wearing mine." And she breaks. It's the beginning of the level. And she breaks her necklace. And the beads that come off the necklace become the environment of the level that you traverse. So I'm like, yep, parents broke apart. I'm still not exactly sure how or this is playing in other than, not wanting to make the mistakes of the past. And then the level ends. And every time a level ends and the woman on the beach tears a page away from the notebook, she has to move to a different spot on the beach. And I didn't realize why she was moving to a different spot of the beach. Because you start at the far end of the beach.
Do you end up getting closer to the water?
No. You end up getting closer to this house. And I start thinking, maybe that's her house. Maybe she walked out to the end of the beach today because this was how she was going to make her way back home to a place where she was safe, to a new place that she started by getting rid of these memories, letting them being taken out by the water and the wind.
Maybe she's heading back to the house that all these memories are she's bound to. She's still tied to them.
Right. So and I didn't make that connection yet. I went the other way, and I thought she was going back to her home, which was her new place to be bound to. I didn't think of that this is a place where those memories were bound to, right?
For full closure, as many people... I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I will not profess that I understand this. From my own personal experience, when you are holding on to, or things are holding on to you, because it depends on how you feel about it, when you become aware of the dissonance in one's life, to fully purge that toxic energy or that shadow or that weight, one, you have to acknowledge its real existence. No more sugarcoating it. No more, shrugging it off. No more making light of it. You just have to be like, this traumatic thing, this horrible thing that I did not deserve occurred to me. It affected me. You have to, it's just like a rehab. You have to acknowledge it. You have to acknowledge what it has done to you in all schemes. Walk through all of that. And then you're able to tear it away and break it away and take it to a pace where it no longer drags behind you and it no longer leaves that shadow. So that's powerful. That is some powerful stuff to end up in the physical place where all these memories and all this energy is just kind of sitting stagnant, but she doesn't want to bring it with her into her new place, so she has to purge it.
That's what I'm thinking, right? So you get further down the beach, and at any point in time where you are on the beach and you're looking at the notebook, you can flip the pages that are left in the notebook, so you can basically see the levels that are there. And you don't have to play the levels in order. You can play them out of order. I don't recommend it, but you can, because you do
get to... Do you lose the narrative if you jump?
No, you just have to remember to put things back in order yourself, because the pieces that you see are the pieces that are tied to that level. So, as example, there's a point where there's an interaction between the princess and the queen, where the queen is talking about how there are seeds of evil in everyone, and the thing that we just don't know is when those seeds will show themselves or reveal themselves in people. So she's basically saying there's darkness inside of all of us, and sometimes it comes out. And I realize that the queen is talking about, her husband, and the girl's dad, and his behavior towards everyone. So this is the point where if you want to stop and you want to experience the ending of the game before I tell you, skip ahead like a few minutes in the podcast or just pause the podcast. Go and play the game because it doesn't take very long to get through. You can do it in, you know, probably about an hour and a half, okay, maybe. But this is the point to pause because I'm about to spoil it. So once you complete the, what is basically the last level, if you didn't skip ahead and look at all the photos, when you tear out the last page of the notebook, what you see is that the images that are the first page and the last page create a picture of a whole family. So she had drawn in the front her brother and her dad holding her brother's hand. And in the back on the last pages, her mother holding her hand as these characters. And so when you ripped the pages out that were in between, they once again became a united family. At this point, you start walking up the steps of the house, which is a gorgeous beach house. And as I'm walking, I'm like, oh, I must have to go up to the upper deck because I could see some chairs on the upper deck. And I'm like, that must be the last level where I'll have like the epiphany and then probably walk into the nursery or something that I've made for the baby, right? No, as you're walking the steps, you come to these sliding glass doors. And you can see in the distance a man reading a book with white hair. And at that point, I realized she's been walking to her dad's house.
Oh. Okay. As if to choose her dad?
To confront her dad.
Oh, about.
And get closure. Because in the last final level, you finally make it to the end of the hallway. And when you get to the end of the hallway, the memory that is revealed is the memory of the day that her dad left. Oh. Just walked out the door. And her mom is holding your brother back and she's trying to hold on to you. As you, the girl, are reaching for your dad and he's grabbing his coat and walking out the door.
Emotion.
And so this flashes and you realize that she's come to confront her father who left. And he is oblivious because he is just sitting on his couch reading this book in this gorgeous house with white hair. And there's a flash, and I can't remember if it's before that memory or after, but there's a flash where the princess has finally made it to what I will call the king, her father. And he's not yelling anymore, and he's just hunkered over these pillars. And she presses her hand up against him and just goes, "Father, Father, why did you leave us?" And the father character says, "Because I could." And pulls away. Yeah, like my heart, like I just started bawling. I was just bawling my eyes out at this point. I was like, what did you just do to me, Santa Monica Studios?
There is like this pit in my stomach right now.
I was like, my God.
This is even like a real person. But like, to know that in life, there are families that have gone through this. And families who are currently going through it. And like, how impactful for a father, someone who, you know, was apparently about it in the beginning. Just something in his mind just switches off and he's able to shred his skin like a snake and walk away feeling completely entitled and unchained to the actions of his life, like emerging like a whole new person it hurts my stomach.
So then you walk past the windows. And you make it to the door of the house. And just as you make it to the door of the house, a car pulls up. And you are given two choices. You can ring the doorbell, or you can get in the car without ringing the doorbell.
So you could choose to actually fully do the closure.
Attempt the closure, or run away.
Run away. What did you do?
Now, I'm bawling at this point, so I'm like, oh no, motherfucker, you gon' see me today. You gon' see me today. I didn't even give the screen a choice. I was like, X to ring doorbell.
X to pay respects, motherfucker. Okay. X to give it to you, what?
Okay, put some respect on my name, okay? I'm holding X, tapping X. Finally, the doorbell rings. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you gonna see me today, motherfucker. That's right. Leave me. Just because you can't. No, fuck you. Look at me. I'm having your grandbaby, you asshole. You don't even know me. You don't know my baby. You don't know my life. Like, I'm getting all upset. Door's not even open yet. I can't say anything to this man. This man's not even my father. He's just a bunch of pixels. But I'm pissed as hell. Okay?
My daddy would never do that.
Hell no. Okay? So I'm pissed as hell, right? The door opens, and I'm like, give it to him with both barrels. Do it!
And?
She hands the notebook forward.
Oh, with all the pages ripped
out. Yep. So it's just the pages.
That show the whole family united.
Yep.
Man.
Now and I understand. Screen goes black.
Now I understand the artistry of what this is.
You need to look at the game, because no, you don't. It is breathtakingly beautiful.
Oh, no.
Because as you walk through the world disappears.
Yeah.
So everything crackles under your feet. And there because are...
It's all breaking away to the point leading up to your confrontation.
And as you engage...
back, and they're shattering as you...
And as you engage with walls and things, they actually let you peer inside and see if there are secrets or other areas. There are shortcuts within the levels, and you get trophies for finding the shortcuts to get around things. So as you walk up to a wall, you can actually press up against it, and it may move back, and there may be an entire another room that you saw merely by walking past it on another path, but because you walk past it in a certain way, it actually breaks the geometry of the wall, almost like what we would consider a glitch in, like, mm-hmm. another game, is actually the feature of this game. So as you walk past walls, they break open so you can see what is inside them or near them. And so it's just, like, it was such a kick in the pants because... After that, and you hand the book, which we know that the only pages that are in the book are the pages that put the family together. You don't see the book opened. You just see her handing the notebook forward.
Right. So you, the player, know what's in this book.
Right. And then the screen goes to black and the credits roll.
And that makes me wonder what happens if you get in the car.
Right?
Like, you've already ripped out all the pages, so you're going to hold on to the memory of a solid family? Or are you giving him the book to show him the family that he has torn apart?
Like, are you giving him the book to show him the family that he has left behind?
The actions. Yeah.
Or are you merely showing him that no matter what, you are bound together?
Even though you left me, we're bound.
Because we're family.
Maybe. Ah, shit.
As I have a new generation come. Like, game is so deep. So deep. And it's only $20. Okay? It's $19.99. It's on the PlayStation Store right now. It is absolutely gorgeous. And I was so surprised because I saw no marketing for this other than I remember a quick trailer at E3 for the game. But didn't really explain what it was. And I feel like they didn't market it because they didn't know how to market it. Because,
well, here's the thing.
This is not a happy-go-lucky joy, your princess is in this castle kind of game. It's right. Very deep. Again, very. You know, that game company, even their quote-unquote frivolous games are deep. And Bound is no exception.
I see this game opening up a lot of conversation.
Like,
depending on the time.
I cried.
It wants to make you recognize the things that you are bound to. Mm-hmm. And it resonates with... Because everyone has had this feeling. Even if it's not necessarily a broken family per se. It could be a relationship. It could be a marriage. Friendship. It could be a friendship. Mm-hmm. The feelings are all interlayered. It doesn't matter the actual
loss of connection is felt the same way by all people. When you're connected to someone,
easy to relate to those emotional triggers.
Because everyone has a connection to someone in some way, whether it is, you know, a very tight family or a really great friendship or a really great relationship or a really great marriage. We all at some point in life make a connection to someone else. And you do. You feel connected. You feel bound to that person. You experience life with that person. If you're lucky, it's multiple people. And when that goes away, or when that is threatened, or when someone who is connected to you pulls away, or you're the person that is the one that pulls away, that pull is felt, and it reverberates through us. And how we relate to ourselves and other people, you know, I've had friendships.
Our past does shape and dictate how we react in the future.
And that's why, you know, again, I went back to, after I finished the game, to the website, and, you know, it's just all photos, and either watch a trailer or buy the game or get wallpapers. That's it. There's a photo contest because, again, the game is so beautiful. It does have its own built-in camera system, so you can take photos, move the camera wherever you want, and there's a contest going on right now for great photos coming out of Bound. But that's it that's on the website, and I was looking for text because I was like, I want to know, like, is it this woman's struggle, or like, what is the deal here? And the line simply on the website is that sometimes in order to take a step forward, in order to move forward, you must take a step back. And so that's when, like, all the things clicked for me. And I was like, yeah, because she's pregnant. And they make it very clear that she's pregnant. So she is about to start her family.
About to be a queen of her own kingdom.
She is about to be the queen of her own kingdom. She's about to become a mother. I'm guessing the person that was driving up in the car was probably her husband.
Probably like, get it. Get in this car right now. We are past this. Like, apparently, she's not.
You know, and it's probably her husband in the car going, I'm here for you, whichever way you want to go. Because if you do choose the door, you do hear a car door shut. So I think that was the sound of him getting out of the car and coming up the other steps.
Okay.
So it is that she does have her own kingdom, and she has become bound to someone else. But
wait, how is your brother the savior? Does he protect you in certain memories?
Yeah, so when you see certain memories, you'll see that your brother is, like, covering your ears so you don't have to listen to them fight. Oh, or okay. He has his arm out protecting you and has you behind him.
Okay.
So that's why that's the savior. And they don't
It could also be your brother who's showing up.
Well, that is your brother.
I mean at the end.
It could be your brother. Like I said, I assume it's her husband. Because she has her own quote unquote kingdom. So that's why I say I assume, but it absolutely could be her brother. It could be her savior rolling up.
Being like, I support you in what, very much like you said for the husband. Here I am supporting you in whatever your choice is.
Right. Absolutely could be. I don't know. You know, because when you see the woman, it's not like you see a ring on any finger.
Damn. Damn, sis.
Yeah. That's why I was like I have to go
you
first.
Start with
I can't.
So heady, and now you're like, yeah, I was at B-Fig, and I played a game about ape killing people. Like,
yeah, and so I was like, I have to go first because this is gonna like burn a hole in me if I don't. And also, this is not the way that we should end the podcast.
No, absolutely not. People be like, I need hugs like right now. Like, anyway, so then let me now take the mic.
I'm just ending. You need to play Bound if you have a PlayStation 4. You need to play this game. Show your support for a really, really unique game that is definitely not like really anything you've played before. And play Bound. It's $19.99 And like I said, once you complete the story once, it opens up a speed run. And I think that this is the kind of game that speedrunners are going to love, because the platforming elements in this game are difficult. I fell off of things more times than not because, again, the world is abstract. So you have platforms that go all Escher-like and float, and you're upside down and sideways, and but you still have to jump. And if you don't position the camera just right, your math is actually off, and you just fall into the pit, and you just hear yourself go, "Oh!" And you have to start all over again. And so there is a challenge to it. It is not impossible, but there is a challenge to every level, and the story is just unbelievably real. Nice job, Sandlot Studios. So, I'll get off the mic of 1,000 Truths now.
Okay. You get comfy, it's my turn. So, initially, like we said a little bit before, I was at B-Fig this past weekend. Ninja had some real-life situations.
Girl, I had to work. You can say it. I had to work.
She had to go to her job. And
I was at my J-O-B.
Doing what she do.
Yep.
So it was just me, KBD, Quicksilver, and some of my personal friends also rolled up who are
IRL peeps.
My IRL peeps. And actually, I actually saw Octocamo, who I know back from our All Games days.
He came through,
and I saw him, and we talked a little bit about real life stuff. So, word up, Octocamo. So nice to see you. But going right along. So this year's B-Fig. At first, when I got there, because I got there a little late, because my job was like, I need this thing. And I said, I can give you 30 minutes of my time. Pay me overtime. Thank you. Moving right along.
Get that OT.
Get that OT. I earned my OT. I'm sorry. But
I earned my OT too. I just don't get it.
Get it. Right. I get mine. And so when I got there, I realized right off the bat from the scheduling that there were no more talks or panels, which was a little disturbing, even though, granted, in most cases of B-Fig, I think the first 2 years, I would jump between the showcase floor and panels and before. So I was a little surprised that we didn't have them this year. And I think that is because, one, they are really trying to fine-tune exactly what the Boston Festival of Indie Games B-Fig is going to be. Because we've had really good numbers these last few years, so much so that now Connecticut has their own fig.
Yeah, C-Fig.
That actually is, I think it's next week, actually, that they're going off. And I mean, the inevitable is happening. I thought we'd see more B-Figs coming out of big schools that have, you know, a big technical computer, you know, program, since a lot of people are strongly interested in games. Or at least from my opinion, it seems like a lot of people are very interested in design and animation and all that type of stuff. So why not have a place where you can showcase that? With that said, this year, there was a noticeable difference in the layout, what they were showing, and what was available. And these were
so what do you mean noticeable difference in the layout?
So from the first B-Fig, you literally had the athletic center is where the digital showcase was. And it was at that point strictly digital. And then you had your panels in the MIT building with one room, like one classroom dedicated to tabletop. And that room had like maybe 6 tables in it.
Well, the athletic center, you had the digital campaign, at least last year, you had the digital campaign on the track on the second floor. And then you had the tabletop stuff on the first floor.
But I'm just talking in the general scape from the beginning. From our first experience to B-Fig to now.
Oh, okay. So, I'm following
you. So we've gone from keeping digital in the first B-Fig, digital completely separate from panels and tabletop.
Yep.
Then in the second year, we literally saw digital showcase on the track, the tabletop in the where the hockey rink is on the bottom floor of the athlete center, and then keeping panels and keynote talks over in the MIT building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have no panels at all. So everything is happening at the digital showcase or at the tabletop. This year, they also included a free tabletop area where you could just play games up in the track. So they did not utilize the entire space of the track this year. They actually kind of cut it in half. And if I'm actually even technical, they only used a third of the space for games for the showcase. And then the other third, another third was for the free top tabletop playing area. And then the layout for it was not ideal.
What was the other third?
Nothing. It was all empty space.
Wow.
And yes.
Because last year, the entirety of the track was used.
Full. Yes, and it was not this year. Literally, the whole area that's the walkable track, you could still walk around. They had three rows of tables. I want to say there was probably, 8 to 12 tables in a row. There were three rows. They were very squished together. So literally, you felt like a sardine or a salmon traveling upstream. The con funk, my sister.
No.
Was the most potent. It was too concentrated.
No.
Yes. It was gross. Gross. So, like,
hell, Pat didn't have Kong Funk.
I know, because they know how to properly space people out, and they didn't do that this year. But like I said, with that said, you know, knowing that there's between 8 or 12 tables, you realize that there's a maximum of maybe 36 games that were being showcased in the digital showcase this year. And I think the reason for this is, one, I think BFIG has decided that they're going to put a stronger requirements to get into the showcase, which I'm not against, not wrong with that, because you kind of want to see the cream rise to the top in a sense. But like, they had so much more room. I mean, they could have easily have just made two-thirds of it, like, you know, a free-to-play zone, like fully utilize the whole space, and then keep the other half like the actual showcase where people are demoing and talking about the game. So then you go down to tabletop, which we went to tabletop first, because one, first and foremost, I was like, am I buying any new games? Is there anything that's going to pop out at me that I'm going to want to, like, take my debit card out and say, give me your game? So I wanted to kind of see. And when I walked into tabletop, I was also very shocked at the layout, because once again, they changed their layout a little bit. So now you had one row of about 8 games that were all sponsored to be there. So these are games that were part of the indie showcases before that have gone on and are successful, using air quotes there.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, these are games that have gone through Kickstarters and got all their funding, and we're seeing them in their next phase from being Kickstarted. Like, mm-hmm. Henchmen was a part of the sponsored row, and they were, like, people were just all about Henchmen, and, like, Henchmen now has, like, a picnic edition. The cards are, like, the size of my face. You could play them out on the ground, and that was their whole setup. Like, they were just down on the ground, and, like, hordes of people were just sitting on the floor playing this game. Word up, DFL. Word up, because love those guys. But these were all games that had seen success through going through BFIG, and that's why they were sponsored. So you had that row. And then you had, once again, three rows of, I want to say 6 tables here, because most of these had partitions to section them off.
Uh-huh.
But you had three rows of that. So once again, you're probably looking at best, 36 games, tabletop games. Now, here's the thing that kind of threw me off about this whole thing, is that a lot of these games, tabletop-wise, that were showing, one, quality was a lot higher. You saw games that had several working prototypes, were, like, just about to start their campaign for Kickstarter. You know, people have been working on these games for years. These aren't just, you know, MIT students like, I had a great idea for a game. Here's my outline of my game. Here's the one prototype I have. And I'm going to sit with people and, like, explain my game. These were literally people like, okay, we've got a demo session. It's going to be a 20-minute long demo. And, like, this game seats about 6, so we got to have 6. Like, very meticulous, which not necessarily a detraction. However, because there weren't so many options for gameplay, because, I mean, you could play in the sponsored row, but like I said, most of the games that are in the sponsored are games that we have seen at BFIG before. So that's just you enjoying yourself, like a nice, like, you know, palate cleanser between learning a whole new game that the mechanics might not fully be there. But because all of these games that are out here are far more polished, I don't think the people who were in the tabletop showcase were aiming to demo their game at shorter numbers and shorter time. So you had people sitting in line to play a game.
Okay.
And that one would clog up because you couldn't just sit down at a table, play a demo. Like when Henchman came on last year, they literally did an 8-minute demo of the game. You got whoever was in during that time period got to play a quicker version of the game. You didn't play it out to completion. You played it for that amount of time and that was it. So you got your quick hit, you got the exposure to your game. Do you like it? Okay, you want to buy it? Even better. But not here. We have people taking more time to actually play out full sessions of games. Well, some of these games run 45 minutes. Some of these games run an hour. And you could see that people who were initially super excited about sitting down to play a game, slowly losing interest, and then walking away and not getting. So I feel like playing a full round of a game, like a full on of a game at something like this, where it's supposed to just be, you know, word of mouth, get people to try your game, get as much word of mouth as possible. I felt it got detracted by them limiting or redefining their requirements to get on the showcase floor. Not too many people were selling their game. Also, I believe a lot of the sponsored tier all had games that they were selling. But the people who were in the showcase, most of them were, like I said, right at the part where they were about to release their Kickstarters, so none of them had any of that. So any of that appeal to walk away with a brand new game that is super hot right now was not the case here. Now, of the games that I did play, because I sat through lines for a lot of games that eventually I just started just listening to people who were being talked to about the game and didn't actually get to play some of them, which is a little disappointing for me because some of these premises were actually pretty awesome. But I will talk a little bit about one board game that strongly stands out to me as something I definitely want to get. We won't see it get into production until summer of 2017, which is sad, but I mean, it's got so much going on for it that like I'm willing to wait for that. And it's called 13 Souls. And actually, the people who are doing 13 Souls also did, I think they're Angry Duck Studios, and they did Student Bodies, which is pretty much akin to a bunch of students are pretty much locked in a school. This is a zombie apocalypse. You have to get so many things out of the school in order to win. And there's a mechanic where if you get bitten by a zombie too many times, you then become a zombie and you still actively play in the game. And then you're actively trying to get rid of the student bodies. You get it? So like it actually has a duality to the game, which I actually really like about that game. But 13 Souls is completely 180 from Student Bodies in the sense that you are hunting for souls in the bayou because you are cursed. I think it plays up to 6 players right now, but the lovely, lovely spirit soul guy that I was talking to at B-Fig said that honestly, if you have the PDF of it, you can make more starter player decks and you could actually have up to 13 people playing it with the way that their bit count is. So the availability for growth there is obviously present. And the whole premise of the game is you have to collect 13 souls in order to be freed from the bayou and to get all of your curses lifted off of you. You get a set of player cards. Everyone has the exact same card set in their hand. They're all different colors. And you have a row of cards that you have in front of you. And some of them have, you know, challenges. Like, oh, you have to roll a 6 or higher to get 2 souls. Or you have to get under 7 to get, like, a hex removed. Or so there's all these things. So it sounds like a pretty simple game, you know, wagering dice rolls for success. Mm-hmm. There are things that can shift whether or not you'll achieve your goal or not. Other players can actually do things that make your rolls harder or easier. There are spells that can also do the same thing. And then, I think I did mention it a little bit, there's this thing called hexing, which everyone has a hex at the start of the game. If you get 3 hexes turned over, so they're all face up, when you get them and everyone can see what your hex is. And these are actions that you have to do during the game. Like, and if you don't do them and someone catches you not performing this action, that's when it flips face down. If you do this 3 times, you're completely and utterly out of the game, no matter how close to winning you are. So in the game that we played, I played with KBT, and I also played with Billy Nichols on this one with three of my other IRL friends. And my initial hex was anytime I gained souls, I had to rub my tummy like I'd eaten the best food in the world and had to be like, good, gluttony. And like, so, and anytime I won souls, which mind you, the whole point of the game is to collect 13. In our short game, we played up to 7. But anytime I got a soul, even if it was 1, I had, it's so good. And I had to do it. KBD also had one where literally he had to babble. So anytime it was his turn, he had to say everything he was doing. And it's not like a, oh, I turn, you know, I'm going to roll now. No, no, no. I turned slightly in my chair. I looked at the guy. I smiled a little bit. I feel like he had to babble about everything he was doing during his turn. And, like, some of these hexes aren't so bad. Like, one of them is, I think it's called, like, overjoyed. You have to just sound really excited about everything, even when you're really upset about stuff. And some of them were, you know, you have to sound depressed all the time, or you have to slap your knee every time somebody gets a hex. It was, so it's something that, it's a game within a game within a game, like Inception, the game. And, you know, eventually throughout the, in the 8-minute gameplay that we did, all of a sudden people just started wanting to dick people over, and you can see how the game has so many legs to stand on. I mean, in terms of premise and execution, it really was probably one of my top three tabletops that I actually got to play. Like I said, it's not going to come out until I think summer of 2017, but I'm strongly looking forward to it. It really grabbed my attention right off the bat. So there's that. Then second best or honorable mention is a game that I wanted to go and buy. And as I was playing the demo of it, this fucker bought the last copy on the grounds, which I was so mad about because I was eyeing it throughout the whole game. I was like, I'm going to buy it. It's going to be great. I'm going to buy it. And then this douchebag came up. He's like, I want to buy your game. And she's like, it's my last one. He's like, I'll take it. And I'm like, no. I wanted it. And she's like, oh, I have some on Amazon, but there's only like 6 left. And by the time I got to Amazon, they were gone. So of it course. Goes to show you how good the game is. But that game was called Now Get the Fuck Out of My Room, or Now Everybody Get the Fuck Out. And I was like, okay, so what's this all about? And the girl, Rowan, absolutely wonderful, wonderful person. I enjoy talking to her a lot. Apparently, the birth baby to this game was she, when she was at college, threw a massive house party her senior year. Lo and behold, one of her housemates had a giant final the next morning and was trying to study. At one point, people just started ambushing the roommate, like jumping on her bed, throwing confetti, throwing Doritos at her. Like, you know, a college party, you know how they do. Mm-hmm. And finally, at like 3 a.m., the housemate was just so fed up with everybody that she was like, now everybody get the fuck out. So the whole point of this game is that you are, I think it's 3 to 6 nerds. You are studying for a final, and someone decided to throw a house party, and people are just jumping into your room, disturbing your peace. So what do? You need to make somebody's room more fun than yours and get people out the fuck your room. So you have cards in your hand. Some of them are instant actions. Some of them are actions that you can only do on your turn. And some of them are items. These items have certain monetary numbers on them to denote how much fun that item is. So in your turn, you are allowed to do 2 actions, and then chips move that denote whether or not your room is the party animal room or if you're in the nerd room. And you have these dice that tell you how many people are in your room, 1 being just you and 6 being like the max amount of people who can be in your room. And the whole point is to get down to 0. So you're pretty much dicking over your friends. The point of the game is for you to not have any fun in your room. And I didn't realize how much not having fun would be fun until I played this game. Like, the irony is not lost on me. It was great. KBD did buy a copy of it, so I'm glad somebody in the Esh crew got it, because it is definitely a game I think you, sis, would absolutely enjoy playing, especially because a lot of the references of fun things I think were things that were fun, not only fun for when I was in college, but some of them I definitely remember seeing, like, in your room, like, boom boxes and, like, like, really cool things, like, really nifty cool things. So that was, those were the standouts to me at Tabletop. Now, up in hell, or what, you know, the digital showcase, I played through three games before I got slimed on and just needed to take a break from the atmosphere. The first one I want to talk about is Sad Hill Cemetery, which actually comes from the guy who made Emily is Away, which we saw last year, you and I. We went and talked to that guy and grabbed copies of that game. And in Sad Hill Cemetery, basically it is a motion game. It is only available on PC right now. They don't, right now, it doesn't seem like they have any strong interest of moving to console, which is okay. You can use the Move wands, which is what we used in this game. And literally, there's no big graphics. It's a very simple mechanic. You are standing in front of your opponent. You are holding your PS wand in your hand. You have selected a color, and that makes you a certain bad guy or renegade or whatever. And you have to holster your gun down, and it's got to be pointing straight down for this to work, and you holster it, and then all of a sudden a bell starts chiming, you know, like high noon, like the ding. Yeah. And
it's
it does
high noon.
Exactly. And like, and it counts to a certain amount of numbers. It doesn't ever ring to a particular count. It varies. So you have to be listening to the bell, because the minute the bell stops, you are to flip your thing up and you're supposed to hit the trigger to shoot. So like literally it's just a showdown, but it is so much fun. There was a long line just to sit and do this game. And I happened to be a bad shot because I could not win at all. I kept getting shot and everyone's just like, what? I'm like, I forgot to hit the trigger. So like, I just thought I had to flick it up and that was it. I wasn't shooting. And everyone's just, it was good. It was light. It was fun. There was a cactus.
Things are always better when there's a cactus.
Always. And it just had a great vibe. And it was a simple enough premise that everybody gets. And as I walked away and I talked to, I think his last name was Seeley. I'm going to call him Kevin. I'm sorry, Kevin, if it's not Kevin. Or Mark. It might be Mark. Anyway, Kevin, Mark, Mr. Seeley. One, I think you're awesome. I loved your idea. And, like, I was bouncing off other ideas. I'm like, what if you made this, like, what if there were DLC where you're doing this, like, traditional duel style, like, back in, like, the Founding Father days, where, like, you got 10, and, like, maybe if you're a musket, like, you actually have to double tap because it's a bigger gun, and, like, I had all these great ideas. And he's like, I love the fact that my game, that's so simplistic, you know, spurs on people to think further outside. He's like, not that we haven't thought about any of those. Oh, his name was Kyle. Damn it, Kyle. Damn it, Kyle. But he's like, I love that. And we're keeping track of everybody's ideas because he's like, I'd love to see this grow out and be a little bit more than this. But the fact that people gravitate to a very simplistic premise and get a lot of joy out of it is like the thing he enjoyed most about it. So I was like, I really dig it. Like that was great. And walking away from something so light and simple and then jumping into a game like Perception, which is really of all the showcase things, like this was the thing that I'm like, oh man, I'm totally putting a pledge down because it's in Kickstarter right now, though I think it already got fully funded, but they can take more of my money. I don't care. But I kind of want it. So there's this game called Perception. Actually, I think there was some talk about this game at PAX last year a little bit. And this game was not a part of the sponsored tier or anything like that. It was actually just being showcased because I think they're adding more to it. But it was crafted by a team of people who worked on BioShock and BioShock Infinite, and I think also Dead Space. And this game literally takes a genre that I love, which is survival horror, and makes it even scarier by setting up the protagonist to be blind. So you are a blind female and you are running away from an entity or entities in a house that are attacking or aiming to attack you, I should say. Very much like Daredevil, you use echolocation, and every time you use it, it does generate a little bit, very much like the horrible Ben Affleck Daredevil, like everything, like when he's in the rain, it lets him see, even though he's not seeing, because the water is like splashing on stuff, and it does this kind of thing. But every sound creates a visual. Mm-hmm. And that sounds great, except for every time that happens, you're making a sound, which means the things that are coming after you are able to track you better. So you actually kind of want to maybe ping once, memorize what you've seen, and then navigate the space.
Okay.
And like you have your headphones on, and like it's deathly quiet except for the sounds that you make. So your sounds sound louder than they probably actually are in a real situation. So like they want you to realize that making a sound, well, is the thing that you need to do, is also putting you in constant danger. Like you're never free from that fear. It is a constant thing. Every step you take makes a sound. Every time you ping a location and you're navigating through and you bump into something, it's the loudest sound. It's literally like you're walking around with symbols like, hey, bad things, come and get me, come and get me. And you can hear the monster.
You don't want to do that.
No, you don't. But you have to do that. And it's really, really kind of, really kind of awesome. And you're solving mysteries as you're traversing the space. And like, as I started playing this game, I'm like, oh man, like I already got the GBs. And they're like, yeah, we're actually keeping a counter on how many people's shoulders we see rise when they get to moments of tension. Right now, like we found one thing that people really don't like, because everyone has risen their like shoulders in like anticipation of something scary, and they're really loving it. And I mean, like I want to get it. And I mean, I think it actually kind of came out in June, but they're adding more things to it. But they wanted to showcase that, you know, these were people who were from an industry, you know, established dev house already, and obviously, you know, Irrational completely like left and is not a thing anymore. But these
and
people were still.
But it's kind of a thing.
It's kind of sort of a. It depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
But these people who were no longer a part of Irrational had a great idea for a game, and here the fuck it is. Like, boom. You don't need to see to be scared. That's clearly the point of perception. It was pretty good. I played one other game called Brought to Light, which was part of the digital showcase. And it kind of reminded me of Broken Dream, which was an RPG Maker game that I played a little bit of and then kind of fell out of love with it. And then Brought to Light really kind of brought me back to a place where I'm like, you know what? I kind of think I want to revisit Blank Dream because of this. It also has a similar style to Don't Starve, if you've ever seen that game. So it's kind of... Yep. Oh, you know, it's top down. You have a character that you're navigating through the space. Everything is dark. The only thing you have are candles, and you're trying to get out of situation. Now, there are some baddies that obviously you can take out with your candle, but your candle is kind of a one use. So if you use it in that capacity, then you're back in the dark, and that's where the things can get you. And there are other candles that you can relight your candle to, but they're not always readily available, and you have to do some tracking back for them. And, but it was also, it was a really nice artsy thing. Like it grabbed me visually more than anything. And then last but not least, I spent some time with a game called Ape Out, which rest in peace and Harambe.
Oh,
I feel
really?
Like the people,
I thought
the people
was so good not making a Harambe reference.
And here it is. Well, because I saw this game and I'm like, so does an ape just escape the zoo and we have to get him? It's like, no. An ape got really mad and decided it wanted its revenge for Harambe. So it's a drop-down shooter where you're an ape with a gun and you're just murdering people until people murder you. And I'm like, yeah, because that sounds like progress.
Progress!
but anyway, like I said, numbers were considerably low in terms of what they were showing. But the quality of stuff was definitely higher up. There weren't that many educational games, because remember, I think last year I was very intrigued with a lot of the educational stuff that was mm-hmm. going on. I did spend some time with a group of guys who are working on software in the form of games that help kids realize when they're in an agitated state, which the job I had a few years ago, this would definitely would have been something for us to have. Yeah. So I was very curious about that. I'd also, while I was at PAX, I had gone to a panel where we talked about psychological, you know, your psychology and gaming and stuff, and how there was a TED talk by a lady whose names I don't remember, but she had made a game called Super Happy, which helped her get out of a depressive state. And if it worked for her, she thought it could essentially work for some other people, and it certainly has. So, you know, using the medium to not only be an educational outlet, but also be like a way to self, you know, cure or self heal without, you know, doing this through negative ways or negative means is always something I'm very interested in.
A way of self-medicating in a positive way.
Right. You know, turning a situation where, and I mean, and the technology for this was really cool, because I saw this guy just kind of sitting there, and it really looked like he was playing, you know, Fruit Ninja. And I was like, can you tell me what's going on with this? And he's like, yeah, actually, he's got this wristband on that's like halfway up his arm, and it monitors his heart rate. And when you play the game, depending on where your heart rate is, the difficulty level is, you know, easy or like moderate. And, you know, for kids who don't really do well with, you know, loud rooms and simulation, you know, stimulation and stuff, they've done testing. They did testing with kids, which I'm like, well, at least it wasn't bunnies. But
don't have thumbs.
Right. Well, I know. But they would put kids who obviously had, you know, anxiety problems and put them in a stressful environment and gave them this game. And if their heart rates rose, the difficulty of the game rose. And it for some kids, they realized that the game was actually the game was reading them, essentially. And that's what made the game harder. So if the kid all of a sudden, you know, like took a couple of deep breaths and like relaxed, the difficulty would drop. And they saw that kids would use this technique of re-regulating their heartbeat and relaxing when they experience these moments of, you know, anxiety. So like, it's got so much potential. And I was like, okay, well, I'll try this game. And he's like, well, we have to see where your heart rate is and then kind of get you into an agitated state. I'm like, well, you don't have to worry about that because it's hot, it's wet up here. And
I'm already agitated.
Like, I just want to be out of the space. So like, literally as my game started, which was a cooking game, I literally had to prep food. All this steam and fog was showing up on the screen and I couldn't see the things I was trying to prep. And then I saw in the corner this little dial that was all the way up to the red. And he's like, you're actually pretty annoyed now. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, just breathe with me. And as I'm breathing, like all of a sudden you see it tilting back into like this level of yellow where I could then all of a sudden see my screen again. And then I got back in the zone and all of a sudden I completely dropped down to a green state. And I was like, that is amazing. That something so simple could be looked at and tracked.
I think that that's a great idea because that's not only just a tool really for kids, although it's a great tool for kids. It's also a tool that I think a lot of businesses could benefit from. You know, we have higher rates of people, adults, burning out in various positions at life, you know, from their jobs. Like, you know, we'll talk about the Apple announcement more in depth next week. But one of the things that I really liked about the new Watch OS was that there's a application called Breathe built in. So for anybody that already has an Apple Watch, you know that you get pinged throughout the day when you've been sedentary to get up and walk around. And it counts as an activity. And if you do it, you get rewarded with a point. And so everybody always wants to close their circles. Well, they've now added on a Breathe exercise that has you focus for a few minutes on a deep breathing exercise to help relax your state, and it counts what your beat per minute is on your heart rate to let you know if you are actually able to affect your heart rate by doing the breathing exercise. And so it has a visual animation that goes and runs for about a minute or so, and you can up how long the breathing exercise is. So if you only want it for a minute, you can. If you want to do it for two or three or five, you can. But it will pulse and tell you how long of a breath to take in and when to release it over the course of that time, and then report back to what your BPM is. And you can have it go off, you know, every few hours, every 5 hours, you know, whatever is the right thing for you. And I'm just thinking, you know, this would be a great thing in various positions that I've had. I've always come to a point where I need to take a moment. And that place where I take a moment is usually when I walk out of the building, walk away from my desk. You know, way, 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 way back in the day, it's when I would go and take a smoke, because that would be my, okay, calm yourself down type exercise. And then I stopped smoking. And so then it became a go get a coffee, because I had to walk to the coffee shop. So I was walking, I would get and vent all the things that I needed to vent, and then treat myself with a coffee and then come back to it. But I love the idea of if there was a space where I could go, where I could put on a band and completely disengage myself from what was going on, like jumping into a game would allow me to do, and that game be focused on getting me back to a relaxed, calm state, I think that would be so beneficial for a lot of companies and a lot of people. So I love that game. I wish I had played it, because I needed it on Saturday.
Oh, I think you would have definitely been like, oh, the adrenaline. And I mean, going back to, you know, techniques to self-soothe or, like, to help navigate situations that might be stressful, like that Sad Hill Cemetery, I had asked Kyle, I had asked him, like, you know, you should have something like this set up for your office so that when you have a dispute with Janet in accounting because she's a cunt, you could just, like, meet you at high
Janet
noon.
Janet in accounting don't give a fuck.
And you could just, you know, you could just go and have yourself, like, a showdown, and, like, whoever wins, all right, and you, like, agree to disagree, but, like, it gets the energy out, and then you could be more productive or more effective. But anyway, I mean, those are the experiences that I had had at BFIG. There was no Quidditch out on the field this year, which was kind of sad.
Wait, but they said they were going to have Quidditch and Muggle Quidditch. Kick Quidditch and Muggle Quidditch.
They didn't have it. Not this year. But anyway, still overall enjoyable. Definitely something that if you have the means to come to Boston to experience, I suggest you do. Prices cannot be beat. There's enough for you to do for most of your day, like for an outing in Boston. For
plus Anna's Taqueria. Come on, man.
Yeah, there's Anna's Taqueria. There's a Dunkin' Donuts that serves fucking pizza there. You're not too far from food, like, and it's all, like, nerdy food. Like, there are places that have, like, astronomy going on. There are some places that literally their menu is a periodic table and you have to order it that way. I saw that and I'm like, I do not have the brain energy for that. And then there's also the Asgard, which is, like, our staple tradition at the end of BFIG is to go
the
there
Asgard.
And to drink.
Yeah.
And it was worth it. It was amazing. So if you ever have the time and the money and you want to experience, you know, people who love making games for the sake of making games, because you can definitely feel the love and passion and dedication from the people who are here, then this is definitely the place to be, to see that. And also, I mean, it's a great place to meet up with your friends and play games that you may never think to ever own and then end up walking away with four or five board games, like a friend of mine yesterday. And I mean, and that happens. Like, you just, like, wasn't expecting to buy this, and then you walk out with games. You're like, I bought this. And that's that.
Yeah, so guys, for as long as BFIG continues to be here, we will cover it. I hope to be back on the scene next year and not working on the Saturday so I can enjoy the day with the team in Cambridge. But there's more coverage to come that you will find on our website, electricsisterhood.com. Make sure that you bookmark it, subscribe to our feed, make sure that you get our brand new episodes of our podcast when we put them out, because that's where you'll find them on our site under the podcast heading. You'll also find great reviews and news and tips and tricks and all kinds of stuff, editorials, everything for the entire team of Esh on our site. You can find us in Apple News as well. On your iOS device, just search for Electric Sisterhood and then add us to your favorites so that our news articles will show up in your For You section. So make sure that you do that. Make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. Either get the feed, get us in iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast on VogNetwork.com. You can get our podcast in Stitcher Radio. You can get our podcast in Google Play. You can get our podcast pretty much any place on the planet that has a podcast search engine or a feed, we're more than likely there. So make sure that you subscribe to our podcast and you'll get our brand new episodes as soon as we put them out on the web. Or I should say, as soon as we remember to put them out on the web, because sometimes we forget. But we're going to be really good about that. We've only forgotten once. So I think 1 out of 500 is a pretty good record.
I agree.
But I digress. Make sure if you're checking out our stuff that you check out all of the great sites underneath the Esh banner. I can't tell you more about them other than I love them all, and you will too if you're nerdy like us. So make sure that you're checking out No Borders, No Race. The podcast is hosted by our homie KBD over at b3crew.com. You check out smashrook.com and our Hamsterman 2449's live streams every Wednesday night on Twitch at 9 o'clock. New games, old games, demos. He plays it all. Join him on the stream and in chat. Have a great time. Make sure that you check out Phil the Issues guy, because I love that guy. His energy, his creativity. His recaps are probably the most fun that you will have on the interweb today. So make sure that you check him out on YouTube. Phil's recap and review. You can call in live, be on chat, be part of the recap. They are hilarious. It is a great time. Be part of it. And as always, last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, giving you all the stuff that nerds crave, from anime to manga, video games, comic books, and more. They're covering it all, so make sure that you check out nerdcrave.com. That's all I've got for this week. Next week, we'll be back with more game stuff, some gear stuff,
some anime stuff.
And I'll probably be talking about being an Xbox MVP, because I got my award! Woo! But, as always, I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Peace!
Deuces.